And it's the problem of quantizing gravity, right? And it is common to many different approaches to quantum gravity. Lately, I hear that it's even shows up somewhat in ADS-CFT. And wait, let me just, how do I, well, OK. Is there the other laser pointer? OK. So it shows up in canonical quantum gravity, loop quantum gravity somewhat. And in preferred foliations theory, it shows up more clearly, for instance, the scalar gravity in Hojava theory. And OK, so let me, to address this problem, let me make an analogy with 19th century physics. OK, suppose we're all there, physicists in the 19th century, and there's no experimental evidence to show us that determinism won't hold. And someone comes from the future, in this case, this guy, which is obviously from the future. And he says, determinism is dead. Right? So if we're physicists there, what would we do? We freak out, we panic, and people in the streets start doing strange things. No, this is not what we would do. Probably would think about, OK, what is a framework that we have that gives existing physics but doesn't have inbuilt determinism from the start, OK? And a good clue for this would be Hamilton's least action principle, because that has many paths. It doesn't have like a deterministic ansatz from the start, but it colludes to give you the same trajectory as Newtonian mechanics. So then if you combine this with Fermat's principle of least time and a wave property of light, maybe we would get to something close to quantum mechanics just from this message from the future. So are we receiving that same message now? Okay. Are we receiving the message from these different lines of evidence that general relativistic time is dead? Is this guy coming and saying that to us? And if he is, what do we do now? So do we look for a theory that has basically the same results as GR, but has a different notion of time? And that's how I'm going to start this talk here. And I'm going to start by basically starting with the Hamiltonian framework, which is more adapted to not having this general relativistic notion of time. And we'll move on from there. So here, phase space will be primary for us, and space-time will be secondary. Okay. So here's a picture very familiar to all of us. Foliated space-time. And what you do then is do an ADM decomposition of the space-time metric, and you do a Legendre transform, and you obtain two constraints. The first constraint here is the spatial diffeomorphism constraint. Let me try to get this a little bit closer to my mouth. And it has a very natural action in phase space. Okay? It has a group action and generates spatial diffeomorphisms. And there's a second constraint, the scalar constraint, whose action is not that natural in phase space. It doesn't have a Lie algebra related to it. It's an unnatural action in phase space. So the Hamiltonian framework, we still haven't gotten rid of this refoliation invariance, because it's still present in the Hamiltonian constraint somehow, even if on shell. And so let's go to the next step and try to fix the time gauge. And York, in work in the early 70s, showed that if you fix the trace of the momenta, so if you fix the trace of the canonical momenta, and you perform a Vio transformation on the 3 metric, all right, you will get a second order partial differential equation from the scalar constraint for omega, for this Vio factor. And if the trace of the momenta is a constant, you can solve this equation for omega in almost all cases. So this is the prescription to find the initial value data, would be to, given this initial data, or this Cauchy problem, let's say, with a constant trace of pi, and you find bi-related data that solves the scalar constraint. This is the only known generic way to find solutions to the Cauchy problem. OK. So does this give us some sort of inkling of a preferred foliation? This constant CMC or maximal slicing, depending on the case. Well, let me give you some evidence first for that. It is the only way, as I said before, to generically attack. Known, I should have said known here. It has been used to prove theorems like the positivity of the gravitational mass in the first proof by Chong and Yao. And it also has singularity avoidance properties of the foliation. Okay, Eulerian observers of this foliation never encounter singularities. So from this, you find that the York method explores two things. First, the conformal degrees of freedom of the spatial metric, and it requires a constant trace of pi. Okay? The pi here, the pi b, if you think about, I think everybody's familiar with it, but it's very similar to the extrinsic curvature of the foliation. So are these two statements related? One might ask, and yes, indeed they are. And this is the first motivator, or the first, where you can see the first inkling of shape dynamics here, is that the trace pi equals zero has dual roles. First, it is a gauge fixing required for the York mechanism, and it also is a generator of Vio transformations. Okay, so its flow in phase space generates these Vio transformations. So this is very interesting. So here's a picture, a geometric picture of that happening. Okay, here we have the trace pi constraint in phase space. And here we have the scalar constraint. And here we have the orbits of trace pi, let's say. And the orbits of the trace pi are fixed by the scalar constraint. That means that the scalar constraint doesn't propagate this other constraint, and vice versa. So generically, at least. And so it is interesting to think about how we could invert a little bit this picture. Usually we think of trace pi as fixing the scalar constraint. Now we should try to invert a little bit this picture and think what kind of theory would be the scalar constraint gauge fixing. Okay. So finally, let me get to what is shape dynamics. So imagine we are having a corridor conversation, and this happens many times. So people come to me and ask me, what is shape dynamics? And at first, I don't know if he's really interested or if he's just making conversation, so I'll just say shape dynamics is a theory of gravity. And then, you know, sometimes he will engage me and say, okay, so why don't you stick with general relativity? And my answer is, well, you know, general relativity is so last year. Why don't we try something new? Besides, there are continuing difficulties in quantizing general relativity. See this conference for a reference to that. And NADM observables are non-local and not easy to find. So, you know, shape dynamics is a good alternative because it reproduces many results of GR. It has a different notion of time. No refoliations, as I will show you. And it has a new symmetry principle and very clear observables, at least in phase space. So the usual answer I expect after I say this is someone saying, wow, that's incredible. I want to work on shape dynamics immediately. That's not what happens, though. The actual answer is, OK, really, what is shape dynamics? And so shape dynamics really, it's a Hamiltonian theory of gravity, so it's a theory adapted to phase space. Okay, it's not a theory about space-time. It's not a theory about space-time perspective. You can translate that into that back sometimes. It's about evolving spatial metric fields and the canonical momenta. What is special about it is that it has this Vio invariance, which is really nice. And it explores this dual role of the trace of the momenta. So in this theory, as we saw the two fixings, mutually gauge-fixing surfaces, what happens is that you can trade the symmetries of one surface by a theory with the symmetries of the other surface. Okay? The refoliations are traded for Vio transformations. The theory, in the end, has the same number of degrees of freedom. There's no scalar mode problem. And it disentangles dynamics from symmetries. You have a single globally propagating Hamiltonian, evolution Hamiltonian. The problem is, I'm not going to hide it, it's the Hamiltonian is non-local. Okay, we have different ways of dealing with this. We can find exact solutions. We can do expansions. There are different things to deal with this. And the best thing is that it matches GR in a very broad set of circumstances, but not always. So let me just briefly, I won't show you exactly how it's constructed because it does get a bit technical. But here is the gauge, basically the gauge fixing surface of ADM and CMC. It's the purple one going along here. And this is the surface of ADM gravity. These are the orbits of the refoliation constraint. And this is shape dynamics with the orbits of the via transformation. To really construct this, you could have, it's impossible to construct it from this. You need to do some gauge unfixing procedure, which is slightly complicated. So you have to use a Stueckelberg mechanism, extend this theory up, and then you do two different gauge fixings, and you get to shape dynamics and ADM gravity. But the basis of it is this fact that you have mutually gauge fixing symmetries. So I want to say that, first of all, that this offers a different perspective. Okay? It's a different paradigm for gravity. We don't have geometry of space-time here. It's conformal geometry of space. It's more fitted to work in phase space. But you can translate it back to space-time, as we will see in many circumstances. The problem with that purple line, with the gauge-fixed ADM and CMC, is that it requires non-local kinematics. So basically, you are on a gauge-fixed surface. You don't have the metric variables. You don't have G and pi. You have gauge-fixed surfaces, which, if you want to reconstruct geometry, might get complicated. And so you have that surface. And there are two different natural unfixings, okay, to obtain theories using the metric variables. Like I said, as you can see on the two surfaces. One is shape dynamics, which acquires even off-shell via gauge symmetry. And the other is ADM, which acquires on-shell refoliation symmetry. So someone might say, OK, this seems like a technical trick. It seems like you might be able to do this with many theories and different things, and maybe it doesn't bring us anything. And in fact, that's not true. If you look at the ADM phase space, and you look at all the possible constraints under certain reasonable assumptions, up to fourth order in derivatives, for instance, in spatial derivatives and no mixed terms, some very reasonable assumptions, there's only one set of two symmetries that gauge fix each other. Okay. This is just basically the VIO transformations. So I wrote down here, this is what you get. You get some free parameters and the via transformations. So this is quite non-generic. It's very special to these two theories. OK. So let me give you some history about this, because I'm not giving you many references. So let me give you a little bit of history. So the ability to redefine scales locally has a long history. In four dimensions, people have been thinking about this for a very long time, since VIO in 1919, I think, but Brunsdicki, Bekenstein, Avicenna, Toft, many people have thought about redefining this. For spatial scales, it's not that long. For instance, Dirac was thinking more about a way to fix the refoliation constraint, where he introduced some of the methods that we use here. York and Omuraka were already trying to explore conformal degrees of freedom to solve the constraint system. But this is not my computer, by the way, so anything that shows up there is not related to me. But then Barber and collaborators in 2005 really trying to implement this as a fundamental principle. Okay, of putting conformal invariants, spatial conformal invariants, into an action principle. And they recovered the York initial value stuff. And then lately, these three people discovered a way to actually obtain a Hamiltonian theory that possesses the spatial VIO symmetry from the work of the previous people. OK, so let me give you a few applications to this. First, a takeaway message. If you remember one slide from this talk, I'd like it to be this. So here you have ADM with the canonical variables, GAB and PiAB. The local symmetries are three diffeomorphisms and refoliations. Okay. And in shape dynamics, you have one Hamiltonian, one global Hamiltonian that evolves time globally. But it also has local symmetries, basically the three diffeomorphisms and these three-dimensional biotransformations. And this is the picture now with a little bit more data on it, because there's some story here about how to recover the Hamiltonian that has this time propagation. And it depends if you're on compact spatial surfaces, or closed spatial surfaces, or open with boundary. So these are basically the three sets of things that I'd like you to remember from this. So let's have a look at some recent applications. By the way, I think there are really interesting recent applications that will be ongoing in the parallel session that I've learned more about here. So I'll try to mention those at the end, but they're not in my slides, unfortunately, because I only learned about them here. So there's a lot of relevance for ADS-CFT, right? I mean, this is the first thing that we all thought when we were talking about this and thinking about this, is because we have a three-dimensional, or let's say a D minus one-dimensional biosymmetry, and there is a duality with a theory that has space-time diffeomorphisms in one more dimension, right? So a natural setting for this would be to try to apply it to ADS-CFT. And indeed, I mean, we can recover many results from ADS-CFT, at least the Hamiltonian holography results. We can recover many of those results. And the way that we explain this is that when you look at Hamiltonian holography, you see that the asymptotically ADS conditions, they imply that GR is in the correct shape dynamics gauge, basically that intersection, so that the equations of motion coincide. So you can explain, maybe not explain totally, but at least get an inkling of why classically this might emerge. Another thing that worried us a little bit was that, okay, now we would like to recover as well Minkowski or Poincaré transformations, right? And this is not easily done locally because, things get very complicated if you have general geometries. But what we find for shape dynamics is that the boundary charges also give you the Poincaré algebra, okay? But they do that in a non-trivial way. So if you remember, we traded our ability to redefine local spatial scales by our ability to redefine refoliations. And so what happens for asymptotically flat is that you can't really trade these things at the boundary. Asymptotically, there's always like this family of three boosts that you can't trade. And these things are the ones that, when you work out, they work out everything, out the algebra. They're the ones that you need to represent the asymptotic boosts and time translations in the shape dynamics asymptotic algebra. So if you look at a flat solution for shape dynamics, it also presents Poincaré invariance because of these features. Okay? There's a little bit more, though, that what you obtain is that the ADM mass or energy is bioinvariant. Here you have the usual ADM energy, but if you have a bioconformal transformation, you obtain certain terms, extra terms, that might not vanish even given the asymptotic conditions. But in shape dynamics, you have an extra term here that has an opposite transformation. So they cancel the transformation of these two things. So I said before that they might not match always, right, shape dynamics and GR. What do I mean by this? So local patches of general relativity solutions can be given by local shape dynamics patches as well. Okay, there's this local isomorphism there. But globally, so for a global space-time, the duality may break down. Okay, there are space-times, though it's very hard to find, there are space-times that might not have a global CMC gauge or a global maximum slicing gauge. And then there's the breaking. It gets off of that curve of the intersection that I showed you. But locally, you can always find such a thing. But so when does these things break down? When clue that we have is that the lapse is not really an observable, right? It's not an observable in GR, really, because it's gauge dependent. It's a gauge artifact. And shape dynamics is also not really observable. However, the two theories have different gauge symmetries to explore. One is four-dimensional diffeomorphisms. The other is three-dimensional spatial diffeos and via transformations. So although the vanishing of the lapse might be insignificant in each of the two sides, it is significant for the breaking of the duality. And the two theories might have different continuations after the break. Okay. So one example of this is that, so let me show you something which might be new. So for spacetimes, the determinant of the form metric being zero, that statement is coordinate independent. Okay, the determinant of form metric is zero in one coordinate system, it's zero in other coordinate systems. So for Schwarzschild, for instance, you can see, if you work out the determinant, it's really clear that it's not zero anywhere except at r equals zero. It's, yeah. So when you can also work out a Birkhoff theorem for shape dynamics. You input some assumptions. The difference here is that you also have to input assumptions of boundary conditions, unlike in GR. In GR, you don't need that. But here, you need to input asymptotically fall-off conditions for shape dynamics as well. And you obtain a single solution, which you can translate back to spacetime, which you can just read off the things, and you can try to translate back into spacetime. And this is the metric that you get. Okay. Now, this metric is known. It's called the isotropic line element. If you look at this, the determinant of the form metric of this line element, it vanishes at the horizon. Okay, these are slightly different coordinates. So r equals m over 2, r actually the horizon. It's actually over the horizon. So the determinant of the form metric does vanish at the horizon. So effectively, you have a degenerate metric there at the horizon, degenerate form metric. And this is bad because, I mean, you can't, you know, there's no inverse of the metric and so on. So in this case, for shape dynamics, there's no vacuum space-time description as we would think of it, valid globally, only for the radius after the horizon. Okay? So this is a case where we believe that the global equivalence between the two theories does break down. So if you look at some properties of the space-time line element, this is work done prior to us, and people were just taking this space-time line element on its own grounds. There are some things you can still calculate, for instance, a radio observer. And it takes an infinite proper amount of time to reach r equals zero. The Richard-Dury equation suffers discontinuity at the horizon. And there's and the Kretschmann scalar is finite, even for the r equals zero. These are all more or less due to this property of the solution, which is called inversion. Right? Is basically, if you invert the radius, the line element remains invariant. So it's basically connecting two exterior Schwarzschild solutions through this horizon. And so of course, these are properties that you would take by that. But for shape dynamics, what you'd have to show is that this solution does form from Oppenheimer's Nyjah collapse. And it does form. I mean, these are new calculations, but it seems that it does form. And but there's also a more generic argument, for instance, due by Tim Kozlowski, that you can see these arguments by continuity in phase space. Okay, because for shape dynamics, you're looking for continuity in phase space rather than continuity in space-time. So by using arguments of continuity in phase space, you can show these things. So there are other questions. For instance, does shape dynamics have general singularity avoidance? So certain things, for instance, if you look at focusing theorems, right, the expansion scalar along time-like geodesics congruences is an expansion of a volume, of a three-volume. And this, for us, are related to gauge artifacts because scale for us has no meaning. Of course, you could still have shear singularities, but these are space-like singularities. And what happens with observers is also a question that we're trying to address. So another thing that we're looking at is via anomalies. Because when you mention this theory to a string theorist, This is usually the face you make. And there's this really big fear of anomalies, of viral anomalies in theories that have viral symmetry. So what happens is that anomaly is a local classical symmetry which does not hold after quantization. Okay, it implies in many cases that you can't renormalize the theory. So what can we do? You know, there are things you can do. There is a known Hamiltonian decomposition of anomalies, first of all, due to Barnick. And you can do a viral cohomology classification. These are technical aspects. What I'm saying through all of this is that there is a way to attack them. And if you mix all these conditions together, you obtain a decomposition of the anomaly. There's basically a space part of the anomaly, which is going to proportion to spatial viral anomaly, basically. You can show this. And this is what's called the viral cohomology at ghost number one. And there's a time evolution of anomaly, which is proportional to the viral cohomology at ghost number two. And the proportionality factor that I mentioned here is actually a projection operator, which is it's complicated. So we're working on this, and it seems initial calculations seem that even this part will vanish. Okay, so let me set you off for lunch early and conclude. So the first thing to say is that ADM entangles the evolution with the constraints, right? In ADM, the constraints are quadratic in the momenta. And this is bad for many reasons, including the algebra of ADM, which is groupoid. The shape dynamics, the main thing is that it disentangles these dynamics from the constraints. Now the constraints, the local constraints, are linear in the momenta. They actually generate geometric transformations. And there is another argument from uniqueness, sort of, is that when can you do symmetry trading gravity phase space? Well, of course, there is an asterisk here. I am looking at a certain class of constraints, not all possible constraints, because that's impossible to do analytically. And basically, there's only one set of theories for which you can do symmetry trading. Okay, and that's ADM and shape dynamics. So there's this interdependence of the two theories. If you look at this, it seems as if the two theories emerge more together rather than shape dynamics from ADM. We've talked about it being a natural setting for explaining AdS/CFT, and this was due to the fact that it's a duality between a d-dimensional conformally invariant theory and a d plus one dimensional space-time theory. For asymptotically flat, we saw there are three extra asymptotic boost generators which cannot be traded. And these generate the right charges and the Poincaré algebra and the Vivarais energy. So furthermore, the CMC gauge may be only locally attainable and have global obstructions in space-time. And the point is that shape dynamics may not care about these things. Okay, and this is something to be investigated further. When does it care? When does it not care? These are new things that we're investigating right now. We don't have all the answers. And so finally, let me finish with a quote by York, who says that an increasing amount of evidence shows that the true dynamical degrees of freedom of the gravitational field can be identified directly with the conformally invariant geometry of three-dimensional space-like hypersurfaces embedded in space-time. We would like to change that sentence if we could, and we would just cross out hyper embedded in space-time. And that's what we have to say. Thank you.
My question is, one of the first slides, the nice, beautiful guy coming from the future saying general relativity, mystic time is dead, is my friend Lee Smolin?
You should ask him, I don't know.
Okay, no, because my view is that general relativistic time is very good and fine, doing very well. No, but sorry, this was a joke. This is not my question. My question is about, this is a conference on quantum gravity. Mm-hmm. You motivated this with quantum gravity. I didn't hear anything about quantum.
That's right.
Wait, I haven't finished.
Okay, sorry.
Nor I've seen much about quantum in the literature. But then in the last slide, you talk about anomalies, which is something you compute in a quantum theory once you have it.
Okay.
So can you have it, or what is it?
Can I reply to that? So there is a general way. For instance, if you look, there's work by Kauta-Hamusino and other people. There's a way to compute anomalies.
I know, also for me.
Huh?
File anomalies, yes.
Yeah, file anomalies, right? There's a way to compute anomalies, or at least have the possible anomalies without knowing, without having a generating function, without having the one loop effect.
No,
of
but
action.
My question is not about anomalies. My question is about quantum theory. Do you
okay,
know anything
so
about
here,
quantizing
so my response to that is most people here are not familiar with shape dynamics. So this talk has been about introducing shape dynamics to everybody. There will be other talks which will discuss other aspects of the quantization. But the connection with it is, as I said in the beginning, that I think, or many of us think, that there is an obstacle to quantizing gravity, which is given by the general relativistic notion of time, a problem of time. Right? Many people have said it, including in ADS-CFT. Now I've heard Nima say it. Or any,
who
anyways.
Said it?
Nima.
Oh, then it's true.
And, yeah. This is a theory that doesn't have that problem, or at least it has it in a different fashion. So maybe it's a starting point, right? Wasn't for instance, Ashtekar variables, right? It was a starting point, and that's what we hope to do with this.
Okay, so I haven't followed the literature on shape dynamics, so I enjoyed the talk. But in connection with ADS-CFT, one thing that we learned, it was an intuitive comment. Or moral comment, maybe it's not precise, is that there's this nice relation between normalization group and general relativity. Right, so you can turn it around, maybe to study quantum field theories from GR point of view. As a matter of fact, that's what people do. Right? So if you're now telling me that you have some nice understanding from the point of view of shape dynamics, what would be an intuitive comment about normalization group?
That's a very good question. We have put a paper that touches on that a little bit. But so I would recommend, so there is going to be a talk which is going to talk more at length about this, which is Tim Kozlovsky. And there is a certain relation, what we do in this theory, at least classically, you can do a volume expansion in compact spaces. And then we get similar things that a volume, as the volume diverges, or we can trade, if you trade York time at very late times, it does look like you are renormalizing the theory towards a CFT on the boundary. You also have that because that there at the boundary you gain full conformal invariance. And this is a more complicated, I didn't want to say this because in compact, in closed space times or in closed spaces, we have to use a different version of the theory which uses only volume preserving biotransformations. So biotransformation, the gauge symmetry of the theory uses biotransformations that preserve the volume of space. And then what happens is that when you approach the boundary, you recover the full conformal symmetry. So there is a relation.
Thanks.
Can I ask you something very quickly? What the question that this answers to me is why the holographic dual of a conformal field theory should have space-time diffeomorphism invariance, which is very obscure in the literature up till now.
Now that you're modifying the algebra of constraints, do you have some new restrictions from the matter coupling sector?
Yeah. If you couple Young-Mills fields, there are no extra constraints you can do that. But if you couple, for instance, cosmological constants or massive scalar fields, there is an extra imposition that you have to have for the theory to work well. It might be related to a strong energy condition, but if the evolution of the dynamics makes these fields get too dense or something, then we can't work out the shape dynamics theory anymore.
I mean, this is a young subject, so of course, but there are many, many old things that may be perhaps ignored here. I mean, it is not true that with the asymptotically flat case, you get Poincaré group even in standard general relativity. You have supertranslations, and there were nice results by Shockey, Brewer, and other people,
sure.
which show that, in fact, you also have super translations with maximal slicing.
Sure.
And so that freedom cannot be killed with some...
No. But if you look at the work, for instance, of Reggie Teiteboim or Obeig Omuraku, I didn't say what my asymptotic conditions are, right? And the thing is that I also impose second to leading order asymptotic conditions on parity of the second order momenta and metric, which basically disallow these transformations to be asymptotic symmetries. This is a way of dealing with it that is much before us. Like, if you look at this paper of the Reggie Teiteboim, where they first discussed this, they recover the Poincaré algebra because they impose these stronger conditions. But there are new work, which I, to be honest, I'm not completely familiar with, which discusses how to obtain these things without imposing these extra conditions, but I don't know how to do that.
I think we should just talk about this later, because I think there are more subtleties that are not there in the Baigomaru paper, but we should just talk about it privately.
Okay.
Well, so actually you mentioned at the beginning that in the shape dynamics you have exactly the same number of degrees of freedom as in GR. So my question is a follow-up question on the quantization. So does this nice property actually hold when you quantize?
The number of degrees of freedom?
Yes.
Well, I suppose so. I mean, I think this would be related to a bioanomaly question. But I think so. I think it does hold, but I can't say. Like Carlo objected to, there's very little that has been done for the quantization yet. And it's a young field. It's 2 years old, so.
At the classical level, the differences that you can have between GR and shape dynamics, do they ever arise somewhere where we have reasonably good observable? I mean, the inside of a black hole is something we should discuss some other time, but ordinary observables, are there in weird regimes some differences that arise?
So far, no, not that I know of. But that is a hope. I mean, hopefully. Not so far, though.
More questions?